Pickaxe.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This program is brought to you by Resonance 104.4 FM. If you like what you hear and want to support our work, please make a donation at fundraiser.resonance.fm.
Hello and welcome to One Life Left on Resonance 104.4 FM. My name is Steve Curran.
And I'm Anne Scantlebury.
And we're a video game radio show broadcasting live from the heart of London.
Simon's not here.
It's true.
Yeah.
Simon isn't here. Simon is in Sweden.
What's he doing?
I suppose he's doing stealthy game stuff. It's not exactly clear. Obviously, it'll be under NDA.
Yeah.
NDA won't be able to tell us, but he will hint about it.
Yeah.
And in 18 months, you'll be able to hear him obliquely referencing how such and such a game is good. And that'll be the game he saw in Sweden, yeah. doubtless today. How are you?
Well, we weren't on air last week.
We weren't. Apologies for that.
Yeah, sorry about that. That was because Simon's baby was ill and I was ill.
Mm.
We don't know if we had the same
bad
thing.
Combination.
Yeah.
So Simon had to run and pick his baby up.
Yeah.
And then pick you up on the way home.
And he really looked after me.
And you left me me holding the baby, which was this radio show.
Yeah.
And I dropped that baby with a, you know, with a nice actually I called in last week.
You did?
I did. I dropped in to Resonance. I just said hi, would you like me to do the show on my
and they went
just,
no,
get out, no, we would rather not. So we didn't do the show last week.
So we didn't have a show last week because I was ill, and this week we do have a show, but I'm also ill. I've been ill all weekend and I was at home by myself, just with me and some sweet, sweet cold and flu medicine. So this news today is fueled by bad times.
That is fabulous. And I've had hot chocolate as well.
Wow.
So I'm a bit wired.
Wow.
I'm a bit on it today.
This is going to be good. So yeah, I'm not particularly well. However, I'm very happy to be here.
Me too. And in many ways, we are basically... You know those movies or TV shows where there's kind of a branching timelines thing? What would have happened if you'd made a different decision?
Ooh.
That's kind of what's happening today, isn't it? Because there was a point where I was like, Anne, are we going to do the radio show? And it was a bit like, yes, no. And then an email arrived, said, no, I'm too ill. But what would have happened if you'd said yes? Because Simon wouldn't have been here.
No.
But we would have had a guest.
We would have had a guest.
First guest of the year, because it's no longer dry January.
No, we're back into wet February.
And luckily...
drenched February.
Luckily, our guest was able to cancel last week. Is it cancelling if we cancel? If we say we're not doing it?
Luckily, last week, our guest was very gracious with our terrible excuses.
So gracious, the most gracious.
And rescheduled kindly for this week.
So we do have three people, and the third person, yes, our super special guest this week, is James Chu from Fail Better. Hello, James.
Hi.
Hi. So good to see you, and thank you so sorry about last week.
No worries. I almost rescheduled today, but felt kind of guilty.
Really?
Oh, no. It's us that should feel guilty.
We should all feel guilty. I mean, many ways, we should be apologising to the listeners. How are you? You having a good week?
Yeah. I had like a plague of nightmares last night. So I'm a little
really?
Bit, yeah, like my whole flat just kind of all like really disturbed at the same time.
Okay.
Oh, like what?
I don't know. Like one of my flatmates is kind of a witch. And she's got this kind of orb coming for Christmas.
Okay.
Like a magic orb. It's 2 months late, so it's kind of coming. And we've finally been told it's on its way. And so it's seeming like that's kind of this psychic energy emanating from.
This almost sounds like it could be from your game. But it's not. This is from your real life.
This yeah, so is really interesting. How did you sleep last night?
Oh, I took some cough medicine. That
okay, cough
got
medicine
me right
in
out.
Air quotes. Cough medicine. I see.
Yeah.
Because I slept really badly as well.
Mm.
I was wriggling, flinging my arms. My partner,
yeah,
just started yelling about me being an octopus. She's like, all right there. Yeah, I was like, well, I'm just trying to get comfy, but I couldn't. Maybe there's something in the air. Maybe there's something in the skies, James. And perhaps we'll talk about that after the news. Anne, ooh, I said this before the show, should say this to the listeners as well. We've gone CD-free today. Normally we queue up the jingles from the CDs, and that's why we're so smooth week in, week out, professional. But someone's lost the CD.
Why is it gone?
And it's not clear, because then it wouldn't be lost if we knew. We wouldn't. So
that's
instead
true.
we're playing the jingles from the laptop, which is just out of reach.
Yeah.
Which means if you hear any, you know, you probably won't, but if you hear any small sort of, if
short
we're not
pauses.
Quite in, you know, on it today, that's why. Okay.
Okay, so shall I keep filling until you're doing it? Oh, we're really looking... No.
You see? I told you.
Was that... That was, it's on random
it's
play.
It's on random play.
I mean, this is going
right.
to go very
no, no,
well.
No, we've got it. We've got
okay.
it. Okay.
Ready?
You ready for the news?
Oh, I'm ready, Steve. It's 7:06 on Monday the 11th of February. I'm Anne Scantlebury and this is the news. It's thought that Activision Blizzard is to lay off hundreds of staff. That's according to a report by Bloomberg. The move is due to come ahead of a scheduled quarterly earnings call tomorrow. According to sources, the redundancies will mainly affect those in marketing, sales and publishing teams and not development teams. Activision Blizzard recently parted ways with its CFO as well as Destiny developer Bungie, and Blizzard's CEO stepped down in October. It's reported that the layoffs are part of a plan to centralise functions and boost profits.
They did part ways with their CFO, didn't they?
Yeah.
And they got a new CFO, didn't they?
Yeah.
And he got a bit of money, didn't he?
Oh, yeah.
How much did he get?
Was that... I want to say 15.
I want to say 15.
Million.
James, do you want to say 15?
I'll say 14.
Oh. Motion carried, but not unanimously.
Yeah.
Somewhere in the region of $14 to $15 million, we think.
Yeah.
And so, obviously... A lot of people on Twitter noticing the dissonance here. Conflict between CFOs being paid that much and loads of people getting let go.
Yeah.
Now, of course, first, good luck to everybody involved.
Yes.
And I'm sure your life will get better and better from here, despite difficult days.
To be honest, I didn't really want to do this story. It's quite a big one because we've been covering a lot of Activision Blizzard stuff recently. And it is really weird to say, oh, tomorrow, it's not even happened yet. Tomorrow, it's thought that loads of people are going to lose their job. I just find it really odd to talk, because this is people's lives. This is their jobs. And I sort of saw somebody... several people talking on Twitter today about how actually there's very few companies, like massive companies like this. And so when people get laid off, then lots of people end up having to like upheave their family and move, you know, across country to find new jobs and things like that at large studios. So it's just, this story obviously is incredibly upsetting, but it's just a bit weird to be talking about people's lives like this.
And we have a story like this every few months, don't we?
Yeah.
Less, probably. fewer. And it is, yeah, it's super distressing when you think about it on a personal level, because every single one of those jobs is a human whose life is going to be affected. But I did see another argument on Twitter, which was saying, well, listen, there is a massive dissonance between the CFO's $50 million payout and Activision, letting loads of people go. But the cost of running a studio developer like that, $50 million, is actually not that much in the context of this. The two things are startling when placed next to each other. One human's... Well, if you connect money with happiness, one human's ludicrous positive and, countless negatives. But actually, we should be looking at them in isolation and saying this kind of executive pay, in my opinion, is absolutely obscene. And the redundancies don't affect that one way or another. You know, the redundancies are super sad in and of themselves. Sometimes companies have to make those changes in order to stay afloat. Separate to that, I don't know anyone who deserves that kind of financial incentive. That stuff makes me, both halves of this make me angry independently, I think.
And one thing that kind of someone saying, kind of like, these things happen every couple of months, the kind of effect on the job market, and people kind of basically kind of, once one wave happens, it's not like they all find employment within that kind of space of time. So it's just kind of, it gets, as the companies shrink, kind of the pool of workers looking for work grows, but the number of jobs available is either the same or shrinking with each massive layoff.
Well, we, as we said earlier, like, good luck to everybody affected. It is a problem with the games industry that the number of people, the number of huge studios are shrinking. Often, though, there are, good stories that come out of these things. People who are let go form other studios, and from that, the games industry ecosystem changes and grows. It's hard to know where it's going in the future. And you have to fill while I... I need to lean over to the, there's a siren, the warning.
From that story, on to another story. A Pennsylvania state representative has proposed a bill to place a tax on violent video games to prevent school shootings. The logic goes like this. You add a 10% tax to games rated mature or adult only. The money from the so-called sin tax goes to a digital protection for safety in schools account, and that money is used to raise security measures and help prevent school shootings. Speaking to NBC 10, the state representative said, this bill does not prohibit violent video games. Instead, it simply provides a revenue stream. It tries to recoup some of the societal costs to help make our schools safer by taxing an industry that has been shown to lead to violence.
Has it been shown to lead to violence?
So this representative was quoting a report saying that there was a link between violent video games and school shootings and violence, but didn't also include some of the other factors that were part of the report as well. There was also a similar bill that was proposed in October but wasn't passed, so whether this one will end up going through or not is, sort of remains to be seen. But it's just... Oh, I just find it...
I get nervous
odd.
When I hear the word report... Or at least I have questions in my head when I hear the word report, because the reports constantly... I mean, we report stuff.
According
to a report, I had a hot chocolate today. Who knows what was in that mug?
According to
the report, you took some...
Cough medicine.
Cough medicine last night. Who knows? And there are reports that come out that link the industry to violence, and reports that come out and... say that's not true. I think that we on the show have always operated, always said, that we do believe, or the subject is nuanced. And the reason I work in video games is because I do believe they can affect people. Like, I wouldn't be working in this medium if I didn't believe it was the most powerful medium out there, with the capacity to affect people like no other medium. But I don't think it's as simple as saying violent video games cause violent behaviour.
And there are a lot more immediate causes, ones which I suspect given the kind of country this is occurring in, are not being talked about.
Yeah. So I was trying to look into it to see what the Digital Protection for Safety in Schools account would actually be providing money for. And so saying that, you know, they're going to raise security measures in school to help prevent school shootings, usually that means bringing in an armed guard. That has been what has sort of been in place before. And there's just something there about, well, you know, you're trying to fight one thing that you think is a cause of violence by adding a gun to the school. Or there feels like there's a stage missing there where actually it is the guns, it's real guns that kill people. It's not video game guns that kill people. I personally do think that there's an awful lot of violence in video games, and I don't like that as a mechanic, and that's not the games I choose to play. But I think to simplify it like that really, you know, discounts the fact that real guns are there, and that is probably a more immediate problem.
Two out of two very, very serious news stories so far.
Well, I'm sure the next one will be fine. Activision has set up a refund program for Guitar Hero Live after it ended support for Guitar Hero TV in December. The library of songs was reduced from 500 to 42. The website reads, customers may qualify for a refund if they purchase Guitar Hero Live in the United States during the period starting December the 1st, 2017 and ending on 1st of January, 2019. They submitted a completed claim form by the deadline of the 1st of May, 2019, and their purchase of Guitar Hero Live since December 2017 can be confirmed by Activision.
Okay, so what's this about? Step one.
Yeah.
That start period, is that surely, why then?
I don't know, because Guitar Hero Live was launched in October 2015.
Okay.
So it was like a reboot of the Guitar Hero series. It hasn't done as well as everyone had hoped that it would. So they're removing support for it. It's a bit weird that it started in 2015, but it's only from December the 1st, 2017, that you're eligible for refunds.
So it sounds to me like they're doing more than removing support for it. Mm. They're removing literally how many of the songs? 400 of the songs?
So 42 left of 500. Do the math.
450, 458.
Good. Which 42 are left? Like, I'd be really interested to know what survived the cull.
Oh, and do you want to be in that 42, or do you want to be the band who's like, oh no, we were cut?
I would imagine you, if you are in the 452, then you have some kind of record label contract, which Activision... So we've been on so long that we were there in the first Guitar Hero we were there when plastic guitars were a thing the first time round. And one of the things that I remember, and I was working on those sort of games as well, one of the things that I remember happening was that in the first generation of these super successful music games that followed on from, I don't know, the first generation of music games proper, which I guess would be DDR and things like that, the Japanese explosion. All of those first generation of the Western music games that became really, really successful, Guitar Hero and Rock Band, when they went out to the music labels and they were like, so can we have, you know, some Guns N' Roses tracks for our game? The record labels were like, games? Sure. I mean, yeah. And they were like, you sure? You know, we'll just pay you a little bit. Yeah, of course, you can have them. At the same time, the music industry started to collapse because of piracy and Spotify. And games became one of the places where the music industry is like, hold on, we desperately need some money. Here's where we can get that money from. So eventually that sort of, as all sort of video game fads, that bit collapsed and Simon ended up throwing loads of plastic guitars into a volcano. I remember I'm sort of woolly on the stories. But then they all came back, right, in 2015. There was the sort of second wave. But by this point, the music industry's got wise, right? And they're like, okay, guys, yeah, of course you can have our music. But rather than in perpetuity these days, they're working on a license basis and you have to pay this amount per year, which we've seen in other games as well, right? We've seen in Grand Theft Auto, I think, has lost some songs from its soundtrack recently. And there have been other games, I think, we've talked about them on the show. So this is a consequence of that. It's like it's a licensing deal, and because everything's online, they can rip these songs out of there. And it's not good. It's not good for people who play and love the game, because you buy something in 20, 2nd of January 2017.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so I wonder whether that 2 years grace period is something they can argue that, okay, you were buying a different thing or you've had your gameplay out of it. Don't know.
It's also worth noting that this is currently only available in the US, so if you're in the UK and you're feeling hard done by, there's nothing we can do about it. It's awards season, and my goodness, did the Steam Awards happen? That was a rhetorical question, because yes, they did happen, and I'm going to talk about them now. Voting opened with Steam's winter sale in December, and voters were given digital trading cards as a thank you for voting, which I believe is also what happens at the Oscars. In the run-up to the event, Valve graciously excluded itself from the Best Developer category. Very humble. There are lots of categories, and I'm not going to be able to fit them in before the music ends.
Good.
Yeah.
Do you want to do some highlights now? Let's do the clock.
All right. So, okay. What do you think Game of the Year was?
Game of the Year.
On the Steam Awards.
Assassin's Creed.
That was in there.
Oh.
Didn't win it.
Is it AAA? Is it a big one?
Or
is it an indie success? Or would you say it's a bit of both?
It's, well, originally an indie success that is now massive.
Oh, hold on. Stardew Valley isn't last year, it's the year before.
No.
Isn't it?
Well, I think it's an indie success.
That started small and then became massive. Oh, Fortnite.
No.
No, because that's not on Steam, obviously. Oh, the other one.
Yeah.
PUBG.
Yeah, PUBG.
Yeah, of course.
That was winner. All right. Who do you think actually was the best developer?
Who was the best? Is this a human or a dev?
No, it's a company.
Who was the best developer? I don't know. Can you give us a clue?
It's got a colour in its title.
Okay. Is the colour
red?
What's the colour? Red. CD Projekt Red.
Yeah.
People love them, don't they?
Okay, most fun with a machine. I saw this one and I was like, yeah, that's about right.
Most fun with a machine.
Yeah, most fun with a machine. They have weird categories. I looked at last year's and they're all a bit...
James, help me out.
What was the really weird one that looked like a weird puzzle that you kind of reconfigure like lots of hexagons?
I know the one you mean. This, the guy by the guy.
Yeah.
The man, Zachtronix, who makes those sort of games. And it's called... It's all about elemental making stuff, so it's something to do with it. It's kind of a Latin name.
Oh, yeah. No, I can't remember it.
Well, is the name that you're looking for Factorio?
Yeah. No.
Well, it's not that.
It's definitely not that.
Most one with the machine, obviously, it's Rocket League.
What? I mean, they are machines, but I don't get it. Is a car a machine?
Yeah, it also, as runner-ups, were Euro Truck Simulator 2.
I've played that. I've played that loads over Christmas.
Would you have had it as winner?
Let me tell you about Euro Truck Simulator 2.
Go.
Right, it's boring. But it's not boring enough.
Oh.
Haven't I mentioned this on the show? Like,
no.
I bought that.
No, I think you have talked about it.
Yeah, I was looking for a really boring game to play over Christmas. I thought, what can I play that, you know, because it's nice to get out of your comfort zone, and I don't drive. So what could be more out of my comfort zone than driving a big truck from London to, well, wherever you want? So
where
I chose. Well, initially chose Birmingham.
Classic.
Why wouldn't you?
That classic route.
You? Did a run. London to Birmingham.
What was the route?
Up
London
the M1.
Birmingham.
Is that a thing?
Map.
M2.
Google
up
Maps.
The something. So anyway, I did that route. But it does something. I've definitely mentioned this on the show. But it foreshortens the motorway. So you sort of wiggle around, you get outside London, and you're like, here I go. Come out onto the motorway, haven't hit anything, I'm like, this is it.
Haven't hit anything?
Yet.
Great.
This is it. I'm just going to drive into the grey horizon forever, stay in my lane, and just drive just below the speed limit, and it will be beautiful. And I'll do it for 2 hours until I hit a traffic jam, and then I'll sit still. Anyway, it turns out it took me about 10 minutes to get to Birmingham.
Did you ask for a refund?
It took me longer to actually park my truck at the end than it did to get to... Because it's really hard. I actually gave up at that point, turned the game off. But, yeah, I was really, really disappointed.
That
anyway,
should have taken you about 2 hours, 25 minutes if you're going via M6 and M1, or 2 hours, 17 minutes if you're going via M40.
It took me about 20 minutes, and most of that was parking and learning how to set an indicator onto my joypad because I really wanted to do this properly. And so I sat at a traffic light for ages just messing with the config, got it sorted. But yeah, it was really, really disappointingly not boring enough. So I see why it didn't win.
Yeah. Better with friends.
Game that is better with friends.
Yeah.
Divinity?
No.
Like, what's that? The one that's Human Fall Flat?
No, that's not in there.
What do people like? I don't know. I don't have any friends who play games.
Should I just tell you?
Just tell us.
It's Rainbow Six Siege.
All right, people
do like
that.
Right, but Overcooked 2 was in there.
Okay.
Which I think is better.
Have you played it?
I've played the first one.
Right.
And actually, that wasn't very good with friends because we did end up shouting at each other quite a lot.
Yeah, okay, so good. You construct a great argument.
Did it win bad with friends?
Yeah.
There wasn't one of those. All right, do you want to find out VR Game of the Year or Best Environment or Labour of Love?
All of them, quickly.
All right, VR Game of the Year, Elder Scrolls 5, Skyrim, VR.
Yeah, of course, as if anyone's played that. Like, they're all like, oh yeah, yeah, I'd love to play in VR. I'd love to play that in VR. You're not going to sit 50 hours in something that makes you sick, no.
Labour of Love, Grand Theft Auto 5.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Like, it's really hard work to go online and get killed by teenagers who are hacking it.
Are you either saying that you appreciate the effort that the developers put into it and you understand that it was a labour of their love, or are you saying that the amount of time that you put...
No idea.
I don't know. Best Environment was... The Witcher 3, Wild Hunt.
Of course.
So stuff that... I assume this was just stuff that came out this year, but it's not, is it? It's just stuff that is on Steam.
It's just stuff.
Just stuff.
Oh, and Best Alternate History.
Okay. Kingdom.
What's the one you mentioned? Assassin's Creed?
There you go.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh,
you got one.
There we go. Thanks.
You know games. And finally, your fortnightly Fortnite update. DJ Marshmello played the biggest gig of all time on a stage in Pleasant Park. The in-game concert saw around 10 million players thrown into a game. Then they all had their weapons removed, which is very good concert etiquette. The gig was around 10 minutes long. Obviously, this isn't actually news because it happened last weekend, but who said news had to be relevant and up to date?
Not us.
No.
Did you go?
No, I didn't.
You're the only one of us with a Fortnite account, so...
I am, but yeah. I swore I would never go back in there after I came third that one time.
Yeah, but you've told loads of lies.
That is true.
We wouldn't mind.
That
just go back
true.
In, it'd be fine.
No, I didn't know about it in advance. I found out about it afterwards and I thought, actually, this is pretty cool. 10 million people. And also, a gig that's only 10 minutes. It's perfect.
That is what you look for these days, isn't it?
You don't have to leave the house.
Just
and it's only
up.
10 minutes long.
Yeah, oh, it'd be brilliant.
James, do you Fortnite?
No.
Do you not?
Have you never considered Fortniting?
Not even slightly, no.
Really? Okay. Me neither. I mean, I'm not judging. I'm judging positively.
They have to put Edinburgh in, or is that a different racing game? There is definitely a racing game, one of the big ones, that's just put Edinburgh as a huge level in it.
But I don't think Fortnite's a racing game.
Is it Forza then?
That sounds...
That's right.
Two games I've never played.
Yeah. I've never played it either.
anything beginning with F.
Yeah,
no,
just don't play it.
There's too many games out there. Yeah. You might as well just cut them out.
Just arbitrarily.
Just cut them out. Who's Marshmello?
He's a DJ that has
like Deadmau5.
He does wear a thing on his head,
so he's like Deadmau5.
That looks like a big...
Does he sound like Deadmau5?
I don't know.
I
wasn't.
If only there was a way of...
I know.
We're finding out. Good. All right. Is that it?
That is everything.
Okay. Thanks, Anne.
One Life Left Video Game News with Anne Scantleberry.
You're listening to One Life Left on Resonance 104.4 FM, the greatest radio station in the world and a video game radio show that's been on for a really long time. What a match. What a perfect match.
Match made in heaven, really.
You're listening to Frozen. This is by Amateur LSDJ. It's from chipmusic.org, where we get most of our chip music from. You can look them up on the internet.
How'd you get there?
By going into your browser.
Yeah.
And typing in HTTP.
Yeah.
S.
Yeah.
You've got to be secure.
You've got to be safe.
/chipmusic.org.
Yeah.
And then you can click on music.
Cool.
Listen. Do we have any other business? We did a karaoke Friday before last, didn't we?
Did we?
No.
No.
But we didn't.
No.
But our franchise.
Oh, yeah, we are franchising the heck out of this.
First ever karaoke done without us. Without one of us. And that was for Ledicious in Switzerland. Performed by Haji and Ed.
Looked like it
Zurich.
Was phenomenal.
Looked like it went off.
I know, I was sad that I wasn't there.
Apparently one of the Ledicious regulars went up on stage near the end of the night and yelled into the mic, "Who needs Stee?" Which honestly, I've been thinking for quite a while. Like, there's barely a day I wake up and
you
don't think that.
You are not the only one.
But yeah, another karaoke coming this Friday, of course.
Yeah.
And you will be there.
Oh, I will
for that
be
one.
Heading it up.
Retaking control.
It is going
Take back
to
control.
Go off.
Is it?
Yeah.
How are you intending to set it off?
I really want to get one of those. I'm probably just going to get the app, but the air horn thing. I'm just going to play that
just
loads.
Good. That'll
yeah.
be good.
Everyone knows that's how you go off.
What are you going to sing?
All of the hits.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Oh, it is.
I mean,
well, it's the
basically.
Day after Valentine's
Well, it's as close
Day.
As to Valentine's Day as you can get.
I think we're going
to
have an anti-Valentine's Day
really.
Romp.
Thank you, next.
Yes.
Yes, good.
Yes.
I thought about writing that about Apex. I'm surprised why Apex didn't make the news.
Yeah, it was just a numbers game.
James.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm good. Just coming down from a migraine, so I'm really good.
Oh, that's the best state to be on One Life Left in. Like, because we like to try and clear a very low, painful bar.
Yeah.
Like, if we can just be not painful and get through this hour, then we're doing better. You are from Fail Better.
That's right.
And you are... How many people from Fail Better have we had on before? I think you might be our fourth?
I think third or fourth.
Yeah,
third sounds better, so I'm hoping
okay,
third.
Be third. Yeah. First, the worst. Second, the best.
Hey.
Third. James, what do you do at Fail Better?
I'm a narrative designer.
What does that mean?
It's a lot of the writing and a lot of kind of the actual kind of some level designs of the mechanics within our content. Kind of just having an overview of a lot of systems within the game, because a lot of those we can create and kind of modify ourselves without needing to code.
Okay, so it's somewhere between a straight-up writer and a kind of game designer. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's a game design role.
It's a game design role. How did you get into that?
I applied until they hired me.
Are you a Fail Better fanboy turned employee?
Yeah, I've been playing it since they did Fornland, and it was called like Echo Bazaar.
Really?
So I played it all for uni, and then since I graduated, so I need to do something.
Okay. So did you graduate in a game design related discipline, or you're just hardcore into it and you decided to?
Yeah, pretty much.
What was your degree in?
Medieval studies.
Wow.
Whoa.
Okay.
So, like, I need to do something with that.
Okay, and how does that feed into your game design work?
It does in some ways, because we do alternative history, and it's just kind of having this kind of whole like 1,000-year knowledge of kind of history and literature and art.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much to draw on as a writer in that whole period. And just knowing a lot of kind of weird esoteric stuff is really helpful just for inspiration.
I find that like that is definitely a writer's secret trick, is to just know something that other people don't know and call that into your work. And often people go, "Oh, he's very smart, isn't he?" And actually you just know about one specific thing.
Yeah, and you squeeze in where you can.
Yeah, very, very good. So for our listeners who, I mean, despite this being basically a co-Fail Better production,
yeah,
clearly, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what Fail Better Games do, what sort of games they make?
we do kind of very narrative based, very gothic horror, but funny gothic horror. We've kind of in our own setting, which is where London was stolen by bats in the mid 19th century and now kind of exists under the earth in this kind of increasingly warped and esoteric setting where people have to kind of rub along and like have kippers for breakfast and then kind of meet a rubbery man on their doorstep kind of setting. And that was our first browser game is Fallen London, which is still ongoing. That's a long running browser game. And from that setting, we created Son of the Sea, which is set in kind of the vast dark sea, and that's something you can play on your computer or Mac or now PS4. And we've made a sequel, spiritual sequel to that game, Son of the Skies, which is what if the Victorians went to space, or space in our setting, which is a whole cosmological other dimension.
It must be a... So Sunless Seas, I've played, and, you know, it's this incredibly rich, beautifully written narrative adventure game. It's kind of, I would say, but how I imagined it as someone who grew up playing lots of text adventures is it's what I imagine text adventures would be like in the future. Like, and it's procedurally generated. It feels like you're taking ownership of the story, even though it's very, very well written as well. These parts of the story are being told to you, but they feel like your own as well. And it's got such a passionate community around it. Oh, I mean, you used to be part of the community around Fallen London as well. It must be quite challenging to take that on and go, okay, we're going to make a sequel to this really, really loved game.
Yeah, yeah. And some of it is because the setting is quite intertwined. People, and especially in Fallen London, get very passionate because they've got one character, and that character we can't kill. They kind of play with them for years and years and years. And so telling them, by the way, this is the future for the game, was a challenge. So we had to kind of step back and be respectful of kind of what we already had and not box ourselves in one game into a corner by doing something in a different one. So we kind of decided Son of the Skies is an alternate future. And then we had the specific challenge because our setting is hard to describe to a newcomer all in one go. And we wanted obviously Son of the Skies to be appealing to people outside of Fallen London players. So kind of deciding how much of the lore and how much you need to know up front and whittling that back as much as possible, but making sure it's still satisfying and has moments for people who are really, really into the kind of deep, deep lore.
Yeah, I can imagine that's an issue as well, in that you've targeted this niche of Victorian fans. Well, no, they're probably not Victorian, are they?
Not anymore.
Fans of Victoriana, you know, video games in there. But then creating a sequel always has this problem having kind of a diminished audience, because you take that game and then you bring some of that audience on. How do you distill that pitch down into a pitch that attracts newcomers as well?
Basically just kind of telling like Victoriana, steampunk, gothic, Lovecraftian, I hate Lovecraft, but that's a word that does well.
Yeah.
Elements. And then kind of we say if you played Son of the Sea, then it's more respectful of your time and more accessible. And then we tell Son of the Sea people it's still got all the stuff you love and there are elements in the game. We just wanted to refine what we already had. And so it's kind of trying to appeal to as many people as possible and focusing on this is the thing you like, this is the thing we think you like, and making a game that hopefully satisfies all of those elements.
I remember when we had our previous Fail Better rep in here talking about some of the Seas, and they told us a couple of plot examples, little fragments of the story they were particularly fond of. I wonder if you had anything you feel very close to. Oh, I'm sure you feel close to the whole game, but something in particular that you like talking about.
Yeah, we have in the setting, the kind of talking rats are just a thing. We don't ever explain them. They're just rat as Faber. And we put some in Son of the Skies. They move from London, they go to space. And we had like an officer, which are like companion quests, like kind of equivalent Mass Effect companion. And one of them's going to be a kind of a rat brigade. And I was not excited by that idea in any way, shape, or form. Like, I'm not that interested in rats. But my manager was like, no, talk you around, you're going to do this one. And it became this kind of long, kind of like almost World War II-esque kind of espionage story with these kind of little rats as they kind of grow in number across the story until there's like 10 of them. And they go on heists and break into vaults, and it's like getting the gang back together.
I feel like I'm almost certain that the previous story was about rats as well.
Quite likely.
So rats are a standout thing.
Yeah. Coming to this as a fan, how has that been? Has it lived up to your expectations, being able to like create and grow the world, or are you like, oh man, this is a lot of pressure?
It's both. I've definitely had times where like going into our content management system is like archaeology, because suddenly we've worked on it for so many years. It's like layers and layers and layers of stuff, and there's so much to know, and it's just kind of accepting you'll never know enough and focusing on the things you're good at, and then finding things that interest and excite you about the setting, and then kind of conveying that, and then hoping that other writers will pick up the stuff you're less confident on. But occasionally you do kind of screw up. Like, I got kind of the date of something wrong, which meant a character was like 20 years younger than she should have been. It couldn't have existed at a certain time. Within like 5 minutes, it had been picked up on the forums. It was like, oh. So it's a lot of responsibility.
I can imagine that is one of the biggest transitions, is going from someone who reads the forums and causes those problems to someone on the other side
causing different problems.
So Sunless Skies is out quite recently, wasn't it?
Yes, it came out 2 weeks ago.
Okay, and what's that been like, seeing everything suddenly go from a thing that exists in your own head to a thing that exists in the heads of all of the community?
I mean, it's scary, because it was in early access for a long time, but even then, like, not meant that many people, and especially a narrative game, want to start. They want to wait until it's out properly and see the whole thing. So suddenly it's kind of like there's all this content that we think works, but, you know, you've got a small pool of people who've played it, and so you're worried about bugs, and you're worried about, like, will this be received? Well, we don't have any feedback on this section. But the response has been so lovely.
Right.
And it's been wonderful. Like, just seeing people engage with it and stream it and, like, do little voices for the characters. It's been really nice.
I mean, no one can see this because this is a radio show.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but James is smiling as he as he talks about this. It's really unusual for a developer to come on the show and talk about their, you know, even games that have had tremendous receptions after release. Most people feel sort of a mix of anxiety and terror when they but, yeah, you seem to genuinely be enjoying it, which is great. What happens now for a narrative designer after the game is out? Is that it, or is there maintenance?
Oh, yeah. Like, the day after, it's like, came back from the party, everyone's got a hangover, and then, like, here are all the bugs that have come in overnight.
Yeah.
So it's kind of triaging and kind of getting the worst ones out of the way, and then fixing save games and the kind of really kind of high priority stuff. And then we've done that for like a week or so, and now it's kind of looking at what next. And because the game has been doing well, that's going to be some kind of free updates, which I can't talk about. But there will be kind of new content we want to put in.
No, but we'll have Fail Better number 4 or 5 onto the show as soon as the free updates. Hannah will be in touch, then we'll be sorted. That's brilliant. Thank you so much for coming on the show and talking so eloquently about it. Where can people follow you and get in touch with you if they have any questions, or just want to get closer to one of the people who makes their dreams real?
Or if they have any questions about medieval history.
Oh, yeah,
I'm happy to answer both. My Twitter is at James St. Anthony.
Nice. Good. What's the game out on? How can people get that?
It's on Steam. It's on GOG. It's available for Mac, Linux, and PC at the moment.
Good retailers, I imagine. I don't know.
Okay. We have to race on. We have to go straight on to the letters section now.
We
are running over. Thanks, James. Okay, ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay,
sure.
Let's go.
Sure. So Simon's not around, so he didn't put a call out for letters. Luckily, we weren't here last week and we got letters for last week.
But we also had someone who 2 weeks ago sent in a letter at the start of that week.
Oh.
I know.
Oh.
Why don't you deal with this? I'm going to go...
You go back into the archives.
Archive, yeah.
All right, so this is Chris Conroy, who is resubmitting last week's letter. Dear team and SSG, when I was younger, so much younger than today, we didn't have a DVD, nor did we have a Blu-ray. Back then, VHS was what we used when we'd record. For twice the time, LP mode was fine, but the quality was poor. I think this is in rhyming... think this is a poem. Sorry that I've done a very bad job of it. Blues Brothers 1980 was the most watched of these recordings, a magical, albeit grainy, window into a world of slapstick comedy, legendary musical cameos and extravagant car chases. A movie that would never be commissioned today and which, judging by the sequel, had enough fairy dust sprinkled on it to mean a remake would be almost impossible to produce. Do you have a game that you keep on going back to in its original form? One that you get the same joy from as you did when you first played it, or a game that you love which just wouldn't make sense by today's standards? If I mention Resident Evil 2, will it bring this letter back on topic? Your somewhat tangential correspondent, Chris Conroy.
I didn't hear the question because I was finding the letter which I have found. Can you sum it up?
Have you got any games that you keep going back to in their original form that might not stand up to today's standards, but you just get a sense of joy when you play them?
I don't think you'd... I think you'd struggle to release Parappa the Rapper for 30 quid today.
What did it come out for?
For PlayStation, yeah, back in the day.
No, recently, when it was re...
Well, it wouldn't have been 30 quid. Whatever it was on the PS4, I'd be very surprised.
I don't know, I guess that's it.
Did you spend 30 quid on it?
I don't think so. It doesn't feel like something I would do.
I think it'd be a tenner or something. I think that mechanically, Parappa the Rapper... well, I don't know. I love that game. Almost. I was going to say, I love that game unconditionally, but...
it sounds like that's not how unconditional...
Okay.
I don't think...
I think Simon would say, because I think he said this before, that a lot of the time when you go back, you find a lot of rough edges on games that you just forget about, and that it is quite hard, and the truth is, never go back.
No.
Always go forward. There's too many games anyway. We're already decided we're not playing any games beginning with F.
Oh, yeah. That's out. Parappa the Rapper, $11.99.
There you go.
I
found a letter.
Oh, good.
Oh, sorry.
So, James, do you have any games that you go back to that spark joy but might never be made today?
Yeah, probably Neverwinter Nights, the original.
Really? Just to...
It was all about the kind of fan community. They all made their own like massive modules, mm-hmm. which were kind of huge labours of love and were impossible to justify.
Yeah, that is the fan community as a whole. Lee Brock, I think, is the person.
Okay.
I remember Simon saying, sorry, Lee, we couldn't... But if you recognise this letter, then stop me.
Okay, I will.
Okay. Hi, Steve. Sigh. SSG. That might be why he didn't. Yeah. So I've been playing that Grand Theft Equine, and it seems to be more equine than Grand Theft. The main focus after the shooty stuff seems to be my stupid horse, which I've renamed Trebuchet the Man Catapult, on account of all the times he's hit a rock and then thrown me across the map. Apparently this is rider error, but there's just no accounting for the moronic AI. My unbridled passion... Hi. Sorry, guys. Ha. That's a horse-related pun.
Very good.
I made a really good joke today at university.
This is out of the letter. Just so you know, Steve's just put
bracketing.
His phone down.
Yeah, made a really good joke today.
Yeah.
So a student was pitching me a game that was a bit like Galaga, but with fish.
Uh-huh.
And I said, call it Place Invaders.
Oh, no.
And he didn't
react.
That's quite good. And I was like, Place Invaders. PLAICE. Didn't help. So just kept repeating it. For an hour and a half, and then the lesson was over. Sorry, to return to this. My unbridled passion for the first Red Dead made the 8-year wait between titles seem like eternity, but with all the trotting about the place, grooming, accidental horse punching, and the subsequent retaliation, I find myself struggling to get through it. I'm just not having fun playing it, and I'm one horse-related incident away from binning it off. Good expression. This breaks my heart so much because I wanted to love this game, which brings me to the question... What were your most eagerly anticipated games that left you disappointed after playing them? P.S. Love the show, especially Sega Badawi.
Yes.
Been back. Most anticipated game that left you cold? James, Scants?
I'd say Assassin's Creed, the new one that's just come out.
Really?
I was really looking forward to it and loved like the first 10 hours.
Really?
I didn't fall out of love with it. I just have no desire to ever go back.
Hmm.
What was the Mario Mobile one that...
Mario Run?
Yeah, I talked about that for ages. I was so excited, and then I played it for about 20 minutes.
Really?
And then just stopped.
Mm.
Yeah, that.
I'm gonna answer two letters with one question. Watch this. Res VR.
Okay.
Played it. I don't think Rez is the game that everyone wishes it was at the time, and I don't think Rez VR is great or does much beyond show that game isn't brilliant personally. Oh, that felt horrible. That's saying horrible. That it also felt weirdly cathartic, but like, yeah. Okay.
Okay, another letter?
Well, that's kind of the end of the letters jingle. Maybe we should save some for...
Yeah, let's see.
We're ending up with a backlog. It's quite exciting.
This is good. Don't worry, Chris Stewart. Your letter is coming.
And you know what?
What?
We actually have to kick on with the reviews.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. But we might as well while I've got the sort of jingle ready. Ready?
Go.
Good reviews.
It's a lot of talking today, Steve.
It really is. Too much talking.
For someone who's got to take a lot of cough medicine mm-hmm. tonight, this is a lot of talking.
It's the hot chocolate.
Yeah. All right. Steve, what have you been playing?
Anne, what have you been playing?
James. James, what have you been playing?
I just finished Thronebreaker over the weekend. Ooh. The kind of Witcher spin-off.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like all based around Gwent, but you're playing kind of a queen. It's like a weird RPG/RTS, but all the battles are cards.
Oh no. So it's like is it a card game? Is it a single player card game?
Yes.
And does it have like loot box card things that you have to buy?
Well, you don't have to buy them, but like there's a weird mechanic where like you can pick up cards during the game, like purely optional, then go into Gwent multiplayer.
Okay.
But that's optional.
So the single player is just, it's basically boxed off and you play through it without buying. Uh-oh. We'll come back to this, but sure, please tell us more.
Yeah, it's really kind of more political in The Witcher. Like, you're playing this queen who's lost her throne, and then you're kind of tromping across the countryside with kind of a ragtag band of advisors trying to win it back. So the choices are a lot starker, and they're kind of trying to play some of the same territory but go a little bit more far-reaching in the problems and the questions they want to address. So it's like a kind of very interesting tactical card game with some kind of like mad puzzles as well as combat using cards that each encounter is pretty unique in terms of the mechanics it wants you to learn to win. Combined with quite a sophisticated interactive narrative, and the branches a lot based on the choices you make and the advisors you have with you. Mm. And it treats those advisors very kind of, they're kind of like multipliers to the choices you make. They'll approve, disapprove, but losing them isn't a bad thing. Sometimes you'll want to get rid of people because they're a hindrance, or they'll do something for you, or the option you want is better than having someone executed. It's quite harsh. It's not as well done as The Witcher, because it kind of veers you toward monster hunting more clearly to kind of get the same feel of being in The Witcher, but the tone doesn't quite work as well. You're a queen running an army, like going off to fight kind of goblins in the marsh. It doesn't quite fit, and has some kind of ham-fisted cameos of Geralt,
right,
which you could do without. But the narrative itself is great.
Is it like those awkward crossovers in Marvel TV shows where an actor comes in for the day and is like, hi, it's
like that, but it's like it's also got kind of the, I can't pronounce his name, the Polish writer. It's clearly drawing off that canon a lot as well. So it's like, here's this random person, we built him up. Two people who've read it will know what this is.
Fan service.
Yes, that's the word.
Yeah, okay.
What score are you going to give it?
7 out of 10.
Okay, that's solid.
Sounds about right. Right, you're going to go, or am I going
to
go?
Well, I've got a few to do, so do you want me to do them?
I've got two. Should we go back and forth?
Yes, all right. I'll go.
You go first.
So, I've been playing Art School.
You don't play Art School. You go to Art School.
That is true. You go to Art School.
How has going to Art School been?
So, it is spelt A-R-T space S-Q-O-O-L.
Whoa.
And it's available on itch.io as well as Steam. So can you imagine what it might be like now?
No, nope, tell
just
me.
Just from that?
No. Nope.
Okay. It is a cute indie game in which you walk around an abstract, I would say, vaporwave aesthetic. Universe is stretching it a bit too far. Small. Some rooms a bit small. Somewhere in between those two things. Yeah, let's say a school and the abstract environs. You walk around and you get given a challenge, e.g. paint the last thing you saw in a street or something, and you doodle that, and then you go and submit it and you get some tips. You walk around the world, you find little brushes that allow you to do different things to your painting. It's very, very cute. It has a lovely little intro song as well. If you know those type of games, then you know whether you will like it. And if you like those type of games, then you will like it, or at least you will certainly like to talk about how you like it. I like it. Although I've played it enough now, which was about, I don't know, 40 minutes or something like that. It was enjoyable. 7 out of 10.
Good. I've been playing Alpha Omega. Omega?
Okay.
How do you pronounce that? Alpha... Is it...
Omega.
Omega?
Omega.
It's a game on... Well, I'm playing it on mobile, so it's on the iPhone.
As they call it. Yeah, the so-called iPhone. Actually, you don't say the, do you?
It's on iPhone.
Yeah. Lisa was recalling this the other day when she first got her iPod, and she looked at the manual, and all of the way through, it's just open iPod, put songs on iPod, and I expect they're still doing that iPhone. You know, iPhone can do this anyway. So.
iPhone can't do this. Oh no, wait. So this is a crossword puzzle game, which was definitely made in America and definitely not tested on the iPhone. What iPhone have I got now?
I don't know.
The iPhone XR? XR, whatever it is.
Whatever it is.
Which has got a little like thing where the speaker is, which is like a little black thing that comes down on the very, very top of the screen. So you go through lots of different levels. And initially, I didn't understand that underneath the little black thing on my screen, it told you what the crossword was about. So I just thought, I had to guess words. And I was like, well, this is terrible. So you've got like a sort of crossword set up and it's got letters in and you have to switch the letters around to figure out the words and blah, 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 blah. And I was initially like, well, this is weird. Am I just picking from any word? And I eventually realised that if I drew that down a little bit, I could see what the subject was. Oh, and they're obviously all related words. That's very, very good. So it's made in America, which means that when it has stuff about words to do with houses, you're talking about a front yard, not a front garden. So I was a little bit thinking about the wrong words. And then when it starts talking about network connections, and it wanted me to figure out what twisted pair that was, a word that was in there. I've never heard that before in my life. I had to use up quite a lot of my free clues for this.
But you know loads about networking.
Oh my goodness, so much now.
Cat 5.
So, well, I presume that I haven't got to a point where I've had to use any more clues because I'm very smart.
You're
now.
Very smart.
I've got the hang of this game. I imagine I'd have to buy some if I did want more clues. It's quite fun. Aside from all of that, it is quite fun. Just switching the words around. I'm more smart in the evening than I am when I play it in the morning. Mm-hmm. 7 out of 10.
What time do we do the radio show?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Good, good, good.
I have been playing Slay the Spire.
Have you?
Did I mention this last time?
Week? No.
No, the week before.
I did. Well,
lights went out. Blink twice for yes. Okay, the lights literally went out in the studio just then. Yeah. So, Slay the Spire. So, I haven't mentioned that in the last 2 weeks. I didn't mention it 2 weeks ago.
I don't think so.
Okay, well, can you see how many hours I've played Slay the Spire for in the last 2 weeks?
89 hours on record. Off record. Who
knows? Off record when I go incognito mode on Steam.
Whoa.
89 hours.
That's a lot of your life.
I know.
I'm looking through your other...
Yeah, I can't...
I can't stop
playing Slay the Spire.
4.2 hours on Euro Truck Simulator 2.
So the reason I was worried about what you said about Thronebreaker is I've found my weakness, and it is in slow turn-based card games, single player, that I can play on my own time and think about strategy and take ages over each move and not worry about. Slay the Spire is a very, very simple card-based, I guess they call it deck-building card games, where you play a number of cards each round and you get an extra card basically each battle generally, and then you're building up your deck and that makes you stronger, and you decide, you build sets of cards. And then at the end of your quest, you either complete the mission, complete the game, or you die, and then your deck is reset. And there's three different starting characters. Oh, we've gone over the reviews theme. So yeah, you collect these cards and you play them to defeat monsters, and it's perfect. It's absolutely perfect. I've completed it 5 times now, I think, once with each character and a couple of daily missions. Each time I feel like I'm getting better and getting a greater understanding of the decks, but each time the battle feels different because the cards that you get are random, and therefore you have to tilt your deck towards a certain skill. It might be magic, or it might be defense, or it might be bludgeoning someone with a sword, or it might be using special powers, or all of these things. There are all kinds of modifiers, there are all kinds of special game rules to play the thing with. I think I am quite bad at the game, but I am really addicted. I was expecting to be able to quit out because I completed it again last night. Searched on the internet, said, what happens when you've completed it with each character? And there was a post on Reddit that said, you're only just beginning, because now you have to do it with this and this and this. And I was like, I thought that was going to be my break moment, where I was like, okay, I've done it now, I'm out. I was back in within half an hour. Bedtimes were 2 and 3 a.m., just can't stop. And I've also, it's really compatible with Steam Link on your phone, so you can play it. No one knows that you're playing it. Like, yeah, it's brilliant. 7 out of 10. You've got about 30 seconds.
I've been playing Bacon. Game. I'm saying it's because the Chinese New Year was the year of the pig. It's not. It's because I saw it. I wanted to play it. I played it. You fling bacon at things. It's brilliant. It 7 out brilliant. Of 10.
Good. Any other business?
No AOB.
Mario,
no B.
Mario Kart Friday. Please go. See Anne sing some heartbreaking songs.
Thank you. Next.
Thank you so much, James, for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've been brilliant, as all our Fail Better friends are every time, so you can tell them you've not let the team down. But the next person probably will, and they'll be back to talk about your free DLC or whatever it is, paid DLC. Who knows
what's
happening?
Who knows?
We're not allowed to know. Come on the show and talk about it.
Yeah.
Until then, we've been One Life Left.
And we will see you next week.
We will see you very soon. Goodbye!
Goodbye!